You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Our news guy, Noah Ovshinsky, is here with us now to catch us up on what made headlines this week in Wisconsin. His official title is WPR's Assistant News Director. Noah, it's good to see you.
It's good to be here. Happy Friday.
So I am detecting a theme here in Wisconsin news, and it seems to be a liquid theme. You might call it a watery theme.
Indeed, indeed. This was the week of water as far as news in Wisconsin is concerned. The First Lady, Michelle Obama, visited our own Watertown here in Wisconsin this week. It was part of a national effort, really, to get more people to drink water.
All right. And she showed up in Watertown. Why did she pick Watertown?
Well, I mean, the name, it seems
besides
obvious.
That.
It seems obvious. But the word on the street is the reason why she picked it was because in 2010, actually, Watertown was recognized as having the best tasting water in the state in a competition. I think actually Madison won this past year, but Watertown won in 2010.
And this Drink Up campaign, tell us a little bit about that. What do we know about what she said?
Right. So it's really a natural extension of her signature campaign, her effort as First Lady. It's called Let's Move Initiative. And like many First Ladies, she has picked, you know, a policy or policies that she likes to champion. And in this case, it's childhood obesity. She wants to deal with that issue. And this Drink Up campaign is part of that. The theory being that the more water you drink, the healthier you'll be.
And to be clear, this is not, you know, an anti-soda, any and other beverage campaign.
No, it's just pro-water. It is pro-water. In fact, the campaign itself is working with the American Beverage Association and bottled water companies. So this is a very pro-water campaign, not anti-anything. Anything.
Okay. Shemaine Mills went to report on that. Did she say a lot of people turned out?
You know, I don't know the size of the crowd. It was at the high school there. And of course, because she's, you know, a celebrity, obviously, you know, there was a lot of excitement and you know, the high schoolers, the students really responded to her. And of course, she's a very dynamic public speaker. So from what I hear, it was from that perspective, a great event.
All right. So we go from drinking water to water in the Great Lakes. What's happening with the Great Lakes?
Which we sometimes drink.
This is true.
Or not.
Intentionally or otherwise.
Right. This was a big week in the Great Lakes. There was a big conference in Milwaukee this week. It was a gathering of policymakers and bureaucrats and scientists and everybody from surrounding states that have a border on the Great Lakes came to this conference to talk about various policy issues as well as the health of the Great Lakes.
Well, what can you tell us about how the lakes at large are doing? You know, Superior is one we are closely connected to in Wisconsin, Michigan, of course. What do you think?
Yeah, I think there are a few issues that we should touch on when we talk about this conference. One is water levels. You know, we talk a lot about water levels here on Wisconsin Public Radio. They're up, they're down, they're up, they're down. Although if you look historically, the Great Lakes levels are low. As of now, Lake Superior is pretty close to its average for this time of year. So Lake Superior is, from a water level perspective, pretty healthy. The other Great Lakes are doing better. They are still generally down compared to their average lake levels, but they are doing better. So that's good. Now, of course, when we talk about water levels in the Great Lakes, especially at a place, a gathering of politicians and stakeholders and scientists, we talk about the control of lake levels in the state. Conversation almost always turns to that. And the question right now, really facing a lot of people involved with the Great Lakes, is do we do anything to artificially manipulate the water levels? Now, some lakes can be manipulated. Others, like Lake Michigan and Lake Huron, can't be. And so the question facing policyholders, and of course there was conversation about that, is whether or not we should build some sort of structure to prevent more water from leaving Lake Huron through the St. Clair River, which flows into Lake Erie. Some people think that essentially all this water is leaving Lake Huron into Lake Erie because this river is so big. It's allowing so much water out of the lake, sort of like a drain in a bathtub. Hmm. And so that's always a controversial issue. Some people think we should prevent as much water from going through the river. Others think, no, let's let nature take its course.
And sounds like that's an issue that's still on the table.
Yeah, absolutely. TBD. Yeah, it is. And it involves, not only does it involve multiple stakeholders, you've got, you know, people who own property on the Great Lakes. You've got, not only do you have the state governments, but you also have two national governments. You've got the Canadian government and, of course, in the United States government, which also have to make decisions about if we're going to manipulate the water levels in those two lakes.
All right. And something else we're worried about hasn't been an issue necessarily in the Great Lakes, I gather, is carp. But we're worried that the carp are going to make their way to the lakes.
Of course, this is one of those hot issues, has been for years in the Great Lakes, sort of Great Lakes community. And we did get an update of sort of where we're at with that. John Goss, who is the federal government's, I'll call them the carp czar, the person who heads up the federal government's response to Asian carp.
I'm sure he'd love that title.
And I other people call him that.
So okay,
It's not just me. Other people do.
The carp czar.
He is the carp czar, and he said that, you know, they've made an effort. Especially the Illinois Department of Natural Resources has really been trying to make an effort to get human placed carp, you know, out of ponds and smaller lakes. You know, we talk about carp that's making their way through the Mississippi River system into the Great Lakes. Well, also, people like to introduce carp into other bodies of water. And according to John Goss,
for fishing and
for other forms of recreation. And John Goss, the carp czar, basically said, you know, the DNR is making some pretty good progress in getting those fish out of those areas. He noted that a month ago near Chicago, a huge 82-pound carp was hauled out of an area that was very close to Lake Calumet, which does directly connect to Lake Michigan. And so this is an effort that, you know, of course, they're promoting because it's good news that they're intercepting these fish. But of course, it's bad news that the fish are there.
But how did it get to be 82 pounds? Sounds like it's been there a while.
By eating a lot.
eating
a lot of stuff that other fish like to eat,
which is
part of the problem. I'd also say, too, that like so many things, when we talk about water levels and things like that, of course, there's ongoing debate about what we should do with carp. And there are, you know, several schools of thought. And at a conference like this, you've got one camp saying, let's do nothing. And then we've got another side of the camp saying, you know, let's physically separate the Great Lakes from the Mississippi River to prevent these fish from making their way into Lake Michigan. So, again, an always present controversy there.
And we've talked a little about Superior. You said water levels are stable there. They're where they should. They're at the average. What about Lake Michigan and what we know about the health of Lake Michigan right now?
Yeah. So this is probably not some good news. Bad news, in fact, which is not the opposite of good news. The UW-Milwaukee scientist at this conference this past week said that the ecosystem really in Lake Michigan is completely different than it was 10 years ago. We're not talking about 20 years ago. We're not about 100 years ago. We're talking about 10 years. The ecosystem is completely different. We've got multiple threats with Lake Michigan. We've got water runoff, which is a threat to all lakes, but also the Great Lakes, from, you know, farms, lawns, you know, sewage systems. Again, climate change is making that issue even worse, potentially, because we may have more rain, and more rain means more runoff. So that continues to be a threat. We also have very invasive quagga and zebra mussels. Their populations aren't decreasing. In fact, their populations are increasing, and they're spreading around Lake Michigan. And quagga and zebra mussels are really quite harmful to the ecosystem.
What do they do? Do you know?
Yeah, they filter out. They filter out the water, and so although it seems to make the lake look good, they also feed on things that are really valuable to other bigger fish in the lake. You know, so they basically feed on the same things that more beneficial fish like to eat, and so it's affecting fish populations in the lake.
Yeah, this is a bad news, especially like Michigan is considered the Great Lakes for sports people, and you know, if the general ecosystem has changed that dramatically, you can only wonder what's going to happen to Superior in 10 years down the road.
Right. I mean, quagga mussels and zebra mussels, they affect the lower end of the food chain. And anytime you affect the lower end of the food chain, it affects throughout the entire food chain, all the way from something as small to a small shrimp, all the way up to salmon and trout. It affects everything.
All right, well, let's do a little bit of a turn here. We're going to move from the Great Lakes to a raw milk hearing that happened here in the state. And this is another contentious thing we've got going on. Catch us up on that.
Sure. The Senate Committee on Financial Institutions and Rural Services held a hearing this week on a plan that would legalize raw milk sales in Wisconsin. And those would be on-farm sales, not raw milk being sold in supermarkets, but raw milk sold on farms.
And the idea being that it poses a health risk, and the advocate's like, no, it's healthier. I want to drink it for my family, and it should be my choice. So what have we heard at this hearing?
Well, exactly. You've got a coalition of medical professionals and farm groups saying this is bad. This is potentially bad for children and human health. They also think that it puts the brand, the Wisconsin dairy brand, at risk, because all it takes is one severe outbreak of illness, and you've hurt the brand, the dairy brand. So farm groups are against it. People who are for raw milk or the sale of raw milk say that it's healthier than pasteurized milk. They also say it's a freedom issue. They should have the choice to produce and sell this if they want to. It's and for them, it's a major issue.
Any idea what Governor Walker will do if this gets to him?
Well, you know, Governor Doyle vetoed a similar bill, and Governor Walker has not said what he'd do if it reaches his desk.
And just about 30 seconds, real quick, give us the lowdown on this redistricting bill. It's
right. You know, the Republican Senator Darrell Schultz and Senator Tim Cullen have brought about a proposal during a press conference this week that essentially takes the responsibility of redrawing congressional districts and, you know, assembly districts out of lawmakers and into the hands of a nonpartisan agency. They're proposing taking the politics out of redistricting. It's an issue that so far has been met with a cold shoulder, although they did just unveil a proposal essentially this week.
So we'll be watching that one.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Noah, thank you so much for stopping by.
It was my pleasure. Thanks.
That was Noah Ovshinsky, WPR's assistant news director.
Coming up, we'll hear about the history of biking in Wisconsin. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.